Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Really, dumb.
On to Pierce Brosnan, the wonderful Pierce Brosnan era, and GoldenEye, his first film. And we've said we might do a future episode on the CIA, but we got a big CIA character in Jack Wade for the first time. He's seen first, he's the first ally we see in the Pierce Brosnan era. He's obviously Bond's contact in St. Petersburg. We meet him, don't we, in a rather funny scene. First of all, he's in that sort of old Soviet car. In what, I can't remember what it is. I think it's like a rebadged car that's probably been had about 10 different engines and everything. And obviously that's part of the joke, that the engine breaks down, isn't it? Yeah. I think it's quite crisp that we see him in this film in freezing cold, and then we see him in absolutely burning heat in Cuba with his Hawaiian shirt on later. And then more nice weather in tomorrow and
everything. Absolutely.
So Jack Wade. Wade. And obviously Joe Don Baker.
Yeah.
Reprise his role. Slightly similar, but obviously on the other side. But yes, he played Whittaker in Living Daylights, who everyone seems to hate as a baddie. So he is probably preferred as Jack Wade, as the CIA agent. John, can we hear some thoughts on Jack Wade? I'm not sure I've ever heard your thoughts on this character. I've no idea.
Oh, I love the guy. Absolutely love him. Yeah. He's just a stereotypical brash American, isn't he?
Who's freezing
his butt off in April in St. Petersburg. And what's really good is it's quite believable to him be a bit aloof like that at first. And then, you get the whole thing, showing the role.
Moffy.
And then from the back of that, they get a good rapport between them and all the rest of it. And he gets into Cuba, and the whole thing of him getting into Cuba is he goes on about, like, he's obviously doing it on the sly. No one knows he's there and all the rest of it. So he's one of these guys happy to break the law, he's happy to drive over the speed limit, and all that kind of thing, which is good. And he upgrades his car. He starts with that banger Lada, and then James throws him the keys to the Z3.
Yeah.
So he,
character development.
Good on him. I really like him. Absolute character development. On the Brad Whittaker thing, I don't dislike Brad Whittaker, but I am probably of the opinion that I prefer him as Jack Wade than I do Brad Whittaker. I think he's better as a kind of warm, affable character. I warm to him much more in that way, as opposed to him being a a brute. He's fine as Whittaker, but there's far more effective villains in the series who do a similar role. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Jack Wade.
Yeah.
Any more?
No, I totally agree. Yeah, I think he's such a great character actor. He's always fun to see him sort of pop up, and whether I quite like Brad Whittaker. I like how arrogant he is and how sort of petty, and that he pretends that he's this big kind of war hero when he's not really. But yeah, Jack Wade, it's the comic relief, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it's nice to have those, you know. Obviously, he was sort of the Felix Leiter for Pierce Brosnan, wasn't he? He was the CIA contact. But I think even like in Tomorrow Never Dies, he must be in it for what, 2 minutes or something. He's hardly in it at all. But again, he gets funny lines, another great shirt. And then obviously the joke of Brosnan in his looking really smart in his uniform, and there's Jack Wade in his little hat. Hawaiian shirt kind of thing. Great character actor. I assume because obviously Martin Campbell had directed him in the Edge of Darkness TV series, because he plays a general in that. So I wonder if that's where it sort of links in. And obviously he's already been in a Bond film, which I quite like.
Yeah, it's weird.
You don't do that anymore. You get those, it's just like, who cares? I don't care. You know, like Maude Adams, it's like, so what? She's been in it before, playing a different character. Yeah, and?
Yeah.
She's really good. Let's get her in. Let's give her a bigger role. But yeah, Jack Wade, he's good. It's a shame how would you have fitted him into the other two? I don't know whether they would have thought about adding him.
There is in Die Another Day, there's the CIA.
CIA! So, God damn it, I'm going to get hit because...
I'll be controversial and say I'd have preferred him as the CIA Bond girl.
He'd have looked gorgeous in an orange bikini.
With the bucket hat on coming out of the water.
Would have been to Cuba twice.
Daniel Craig, eat your heart out.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. They must have chosen. I don't know whether it's because of what happened to Felix in License to Kill that Pierce Brosnan wasn't going to have a Felix Leiter, and so they introduced Jack Wade. He's quite different to Felix Leiter, because almost Felix is like a sort of American version of Bond, but a bit different and everything. Whereas Jack Wade is a bit more. I don't know. A bit more comic relief, clearly. Yeah, so I think he's effective, particularly in GoldenEye. I think he's got good chemistry with Pierce. Yeah, and it's weird to think now if they recast somebody who'd been in it earlier. I can't picture they'd ever do it again nowadays. It'd be quite strange. I mean, even I was hearing in the new series of Inside Number 9, they obviously have different casts. For each episode, the only person they've ever brought back is Derek Jacobi, because he's going to be in this new series, because he was only a voiceover for the Christmas episode that we covered for the tapes. But I just cannot see them ever recasting someone who's been in it before. In terms of him as Whittaker, I think in some ways he works as that character, because I can see him someone who sort of cheated at West Point and has sort of made himself into this position that he doesn't really have. He's just a mercenary or leader of a mercenary, people and everything. The only thing is with that, and I absolutely love Living Daylights, but the only slight criticism is that you've sort of got one charming-ish villain in Yarrow and Krabbe, and then you've got another not that evil a villain in Brad Whittaker. So possibly that could be, but then you've got Necros, who's an unbelievable uber henchman. So yeah, I mean, we're not covering Whittaker now, but that would be my only comment. I think he's probably just a bit probably just a bit more suited to the Jack Wade role.
That's interesting. Yeah, Whittaker.
Yeah,
I still keep going back to that end scene. We get an end confrontation. It's more than you get these days. I love it. And because he's so good at the different weapons and all that. And I just think that's a brilliant scene. So effective. The music again.
Yeah. I agree. And I think I can see, I do buy that he's someone who ridiculously and completely incorrectly puts himself amongst those historical war.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to be the next, you know, I don't know, Wellington.
Or
Yeah, Hitler as well. Caesar and all that. Yeah, I buy that. Yeah, yeah.
Pinette. Forgotten about that. And is it meant to be funny?
I think he's supposed to be like a sort of egotistical sociopath, isn't he? He's just,
he says,
well, because they say, what's that quote or something about, you know, using a scalpel on society or something, you know, that I can't remember the line is. But he sees that military leaders as, you know, doing society, you know, wiping out a huge amount of people isn't a problem to him.
No.
You know, whether whose side of, who's the, you know, who cares if he's the bad guy.
And without sounding like putting it on a downer, I think this is my slight main issue with The Living Daylights. I'm a massive, massive Living Daylights fan. It's one of my favourites. But when I say I feel that it tails off towards the end, what you've had is this massive mystery all the way through and trying to eliminate Pushkin and all the rest of it, and it's phenomenal. And I totally buy when you say from Whittaker about how he's not bothered about killing people. He's got that about him. So it just seems a slight anticlimax that ultimately the plan is just to make $500 million from selling heroin.
Yeah, the plot's a letdown.
That to me just seems like after we've had this, that's the thing. The action's brilliant, but you've had such an amazing spy thriller throughout the whole of Austria, the Czech Republic. And then even the Tangier stuff, actually, is phenomenal. And then just ultimately we find that the plot is they just want to get rid of Pushkin so they can make money on selling heroin.
Mm.
It just seems quite anticlimactic to me that.
Just so mad.
We're not talking about...
Are you sure we can't do that now?
Well, we will do it fairly soon. I mean, that means it might be released next year. Oh, I mean, there's a debate, isn't there? Who's the main villain of Living Daylights?
That makes it more interesting.
Yeah, there you go. A bit different.
I think like you say, you know, I can see that plot is a bit of, you know, it's quite small, but then I suppose, like, in Octopussy, there's the sort of nuclear, you know, weapon plot, and then there's also the smuggling plot at the same time, the same people kind of involved, so you can see where that's sort of going with it, so it's quite similar. But yeah, I can't wait to talk about it.
We were allowed a little bit of time, weren't we?
Yeah,
on the song,
me neither.
Which was quite nice, just a crowbar in some daylight chat.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But yeah, back to Jack Wade. I think it's I think maybe they didn't do him as Felix, because the last film, even though it was different, it was Timothy Dalton and it was 6 years ago and it was a new start. What happens to Felix in that film is quite big, so maybe it's a bit too soon to sort of bring back Felix the character, maybe just as a normal guy. Yeah. And like, when you've had someone who's already been in it, it's better for them to create a new character thing rather than revert to someone. Do you know what I mean?
It worked
as well, I think. And I think the audience like it.
Yeah. Again, on my point about Felix being... So you've got the issue of the license, you know, his injuries from License to Kill. I think also, like I say, you know, Felix is sort of similar age to Bond, similar physique kind of thing. And then you've got Alec Trevelyan, who's another agent who's similar age to Bond, similar physique. So I think it works having Wade older, not necessarily in shape, doesn't seem to take it seriously, etc. I think it works.
Yeah, I mean, I was just making the point that I see GoldenEye as just a continuation in the history line. They make real reference points about how this is the end of the Cold War. So I don't really see it as a reboot. I think it's a deliberate thing in the Pierce Brosnan era that they are leaving Felix Leiter alone because he is not able to do his job anymore.
Did we have reboots back then?
No, it was...
When did reboots begin?
Batman Begins, but it's not a reboot, is it?
Well, is it franchise? So
back to the character again, isn't it? Prequels, the Phantom Menace was that started that.
I suppose that's sort of stupid. But how great is it that you can just, like, it's a new Bond, it's a new actor, new generation. We, you know, it's still contemporary, but it still fits in with...
Nice.
You can still reference the fact that he'd lost the wife. You can still reference... You're already... You know, you've spent so long, you know, creating this character and not only can you reference stuff that's in the books, but you can also, you know, look at things that have gone in films beforehand. It's like, what, imagine sitting down and saying, right, okay, we're not rewriting, you're not starting from scratch. You know, why? Because why do we need to start there? We've got so much going for the character, his experiences. Why not reference your previous adventures? Which is always when you, like, as a kid, and I go about this all the time, but, you know, when he references other missions that you've never seen, or, you know, that aren't an actual film. I love that because it made him seem like actually he's a character outside of this 2-hour film.
Yeah,
He's a rounded character. He doesn't turn on and off when the cameras kind of start. Yeah. And it is such a shame that they've not really done that. Well, they've been trying to do that with the last one, but if you'd start, wouldn't it? You just reference, you know, just like, how powerful is it with in License to Kill, knowing that he's had a wife? That one line suddenly adds so much weight to that scene, and Dolan plays it beautifully. Suddenly he's a much more complex character.
Yeah, but it's not directly addressing Tracy. So, you know, perhaps I would have preferred in the Daniel Craig films if they'd sort of not directly mentioned Vesper or something like that, but said about, you know, have you never been with James? Do you know what I mean? That might have been... And you know, he says, you know, perhaps once or so. Do you know what I mean? That's perhaps more effective than trying to tie it all together.
But it's all... it's so ham-fistedly done because they basically crowbar... They find that tape, don't they, that says the Vesper interrogation.
Yeah,
so they go like... So if you're going to do that, if you're going to go that obvious, just show the clip.
Yeah.
Don't then just show that, but then continue with trying to get you to believe that he's fallen in love with Madeline Swann. It don't make sense, does it, really?
With the Felix thing at the wedding. Well, anyway.
Back to allies.
Final word on the lovely little reference to, you know, he was married once. It's so effective because you don't hear Bond mention it, and it's at their wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's even more emotion. I'm not sure I've even thought about this before. There's obviously massive emotion that Felix's wife has been murdered from Bond. But then, is it bringing it all back to him? The fact that his wife was killed on the wedding day. Yeah, yeah, and there's that extra layer, isn't there?
Yeah, just on when Felix says it. It's quite nice because it means that Bond has spoken to Felix about it. Felix might
have been at the wedding, but do you know what I mean? Wasn't on the set. You know,
and Felix...
In shock.
Yeah, but Felix sort of being protective of his very good friend. That, you know, it works on that level as well, I think.
And he's getting revenge for Felix as well as himself. Because you know that he was married. So if that's in the sort of the timeline that he was married, he lost his wife, and he's getting revenge. It's almost like the same story playing out, isn't it? So this is almost sort of what would have happened
if we got
The Diamonds Are Forever.
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you change Sanchez to Blofeld, this is what you get, isn't it? Apart from... Oh, imagine what you could... Oh, honestly, it's just that there's so many possibilities with this character and the franchise. It drives me mad that the writers are just so... And to a certain extent... The producers are just so boring, and I don't mean that you have to reinvent. Like I say, you don't have to reinvent everything, but there's so much to sort of just touch on. You know, why wouldn't you? Like, why can't Daniel Craig reference? You know, Jack Wade in CIA. Just drop it in there for the fans. It's just there because, you know, this. I don't know. On one hand, they expect us to sort of believe that Daniel Craig is like, you know, like the original Bond, but then there's references to, you know, the Aston Martin. So then that timeline is completely messed up. Why not just have that this is the Bond and you can reference lots of things across the different films? But then it's...
Do you think when they started Casino Royale, did they think they might have thought that we'll sort of not redo... There's a possibility if this is successful, we might redo some of the other ones or redo him getting married. Obviously, they did away with that because of the poor reaction to Quantum, and they did that for Skyfall. They sort of said, oh, just forget it. We'll just go back to a normal, in inverted commas, Bond.
I think it had been touted in the past, wasn't it? In between, it was after Dalton they were thinking about, or maybe it was before.
There was no such thing as reboot.
I'm sure I read somewhere that it was the whole idea of having it. But they would have done like the original, like, you know, go back to the novels and start again and just forget what had gone on before. But obviously they haven't, and that's why you get to Spectre where you've just written yourself into a corner and none of it makes any sense.
Yeah, well, I think as well they feel under pressure because there isn't as long a term plan as, say, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, things like that. So when it comes around to the next film, they feel that they have to tie things sort of within
they're
the
all
same
about tying in, aren't they?
Story the loop and involve the same cast. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I think that's some of the pressure that they might feel, and that younger audiences would expect to see characters that they've seen in the last film in this one, rather than where I've just mentioned Inside Number 9 and stuff, Black Mirror, where it's
anthology.
Standalone. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a healthy balance, isn't there? Like Mission Impossible does it really well. There are ongoing storylines, one of them Ethan Hunt's wife, and it's been there in the background all the way through. But each one's a standalone mission. It's not at the expense of the plot or the expense of the story. Until recently, they had a different team each time, didn't they, and all the rest of it. And that's what I'd like. If you're going to go down the route of having bits and bobs, that's fine. You can have certain parts of ongoing storyline. In some aspects, that's how the Bond franchise started. If you think of What's-Her-Face, Sylvia Trench. You know, there's like a recurring character there. I'm all right with that. You don't have to have this big intertwining plot. You can just have these little tidbits going through. Mm-hmm. But have an individual story. Give each film a right of its own merit. Like, this is this film and this is what this does. I seriously don't think No Time to Die is like that. I think that that's the one that's going to try and piece them all together, to be honest.
Yeah, gosh.
And add something to it as well. Potentially get Mr. Craig's Oscar nomination.
Well, he got a BAFTA nomination for Casino Royale. Yeah, but to try and tie it back with Wade, it's quite nice, John, isn't it, to have sort of somebody who's... You don't need to have them in everyone, but they're there if it's appropriate.
That's it. And for me, Pierce Brosnan's era did it brilliantly. Pierce Brosnan has his own little universe. Yep. You think of like Michael Kitchen, he's in GoldenEye. Yep. He misses out Tomorrow Never Dies, but we can just bring him back in World Is Not Enough. And we can have, what's he called? Charles Robinson.
Charles Robinson.
We can do that together. We could bring back Valentin
Sokolovsky. Yeah.
Yeah, we could bring back Valentin Sokolovsky. It's just great. And they don't have to come back because there's a big backstory where they were part of their past. It's just because they're doing a mission and they need him because it's that part of the world. It's great.
Like in Skyfall, they reference, don't they, the Aston Martin. I don't know whether they're referencing Goldfinger as in that was my previous mission. I'm not quite sure of that. They could have said, I spoke with Jack Wade at the CIA, even if he isn't in it. It's that sort of reference you were talking about, Chris, I think you said, rather than make it so on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely what John was saying, that it's the character that's the continuity. You don't need the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what keeps it kind of going. It's Bond. It's all those characters. Not the previous mission has to somehow tie into the next mission. You know, I love it when you get that opening mission. It's like, oh, what's this going to be? For no reason, he's just being thrown out of a plane. It bears no relationship to the next. What's going to happen after the titles? But this is still fantastic. It's great fun.
In Africa.
But no, it has to be. This is the beginning. The plot starts straight away. Or
right.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of, come on.
Wade is like.
But is that?
He doesn't reference. You know, when you saw him in Tomorrow Never Dies, if he said like, oh, how did he get on in? With Natalia? Did he meet up with her afterwards? Or, you know, it doesn't need to be a link, does the, you know, it's like, if you haven't seen GoldenEye, you wouldn't think anything of it, would you? Tomorrow Never Dies, it doesn't matter.
Paris Carver, the initial plan was to get Pam Bouvier back in the role, and for her to be like Elliot Carver's missus, that situation there. What's your thoughts on that?
I'm kind of glad that it didn't happen because...
Yeah.
I don't know quite how it would have worked because I can't see Pam being... I don't know if I can see her getting married. I don't know if I can see her getting married to
Head
a guy like...
For Carver.
Yeah, after...
Well, yeah, possibly. But it would have been a very different character to Paris.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know, it would have been weird seeing her with Pierce rather than Tim.
Just Tims.
Yeah.
Quite strange.
I think when it comes to a new Bond, I think they've got it, you know, that a fresh, not necessarily, you know, the actors need to be, but I think I don't have a problem with them. You know, it could be, you know, like you say, Paris, and then you say Paris Hilton. Paris, wow. Yeah, no, very different film.
The new Bond film, yeah. One Night in Paris. Yeah.
But,
sheesh.
I think with,
don't know what that means. Don't know why that's funny.
Yeah, the again, just massively underwritten character. You know, they mentioned that they had this romance together, and then that's it. It's just this is an ex-girlfriend. You know, that's it. There's nothing really to that as a character, is there? Which is a shame because, you know, it would have added more weight to her death. Spoilers. Mm. You know, it would have been a bit more kind of interesting, but she's just there, and I'm not to get ahead of ourselves, but Terry Hatcher is not a great actor, in my opinion. So, you know,
she's no Terry Mountain. The initial meeting, just to go back to that, just to pad this episode out as much as we possibly can. It stays. Like I said before in this episode, I do like when the characters have the calling card in India, you know, like with Vijay and, you know, well, Luigi as well. I do love that exchange. We had a book. It was like Inside GoldenEye. It was like a making of GoldenEye. It was so good. I don't know whether any of you guys had that.
Mm.
And it had portions of the script in it. So it had the scene, I think it had Bond and M scene in it, and it had this scene where he meets Wade. And it was so sad, we sort of had it at lunchtime, in, you know, if it was like a wet break or whatever, we used to sort of act it out in class. And I remember, Rob and some others, Stuart Young famously played Jack Wade, not spoken to him in 20 years, whatever. But yeah, he liked doing the American accent. But it's just... it's just such a... I don't know. It's exactly the kind of scene I love. I'd love to see more of that interplay. You just buy it. You buy it that Brosnan knows him. Again, he's really good at his job. He makes absolutely sure, doesn't he? Pins him against the car. He could have said, if you know the calling card, that's fine. We can get on with it. We can have a chat now. But no, I need to see the Muffy. So I did like that. And it, nice move, nice car.
In London, April's a spring month.
Oh, yeah? What are you, the weatherman? If I'm crying out loud, another stiff-ass Brit, your secret codes and your passwords. One of these days, you guys are going to learn just to drop it. Come on, my car's over there.
After you.
Thank you.
Like you said, drop it.
All right. In London, April's a spring month, whereas in St. Petersburg, we're freezing our butts off. Is that close enough for government work?
No. Show me the rose.
Please, no. All right, all right, all right. Huh?
Muffy?
Third wife. Jack Wade, CIA.
James Bond. Stiff-ass Brit.
That's a nice move.
Nice car.
Well, this baby hasn't let me down yet. She's an ugly little bitch, but she gets you there. Hey, Bond, you doing any gardening?
A few zingers here and there. It sort of livens it up. It's like, you know, with the... And have those, like, who are you, weatherman? And, you know, just lots of nice dialogue. And, like you said, the bouncing off each other. Suddenly he becomes a... You know, you're not too sure. He comes across as, like, really grumpy at first.
Yeah.
Or is he actually going to be a pain for Bond? But then it becomes quite clear that, you know, actually, he's really, like I say, he's really good at his job, and you know, he's useful, and he's funny as well, and really likable. But I always like that when you meet these new characters, like you're not too sure whether they're going to be an ally or, you know, they might actually be a double crosser and
Rosie Carter,
agent or something like that.
Mm. The ultimate example, and he is crucial because he obviously sets up the meeting with Zakovsky. It's like, I do like, again, love this A to B to C, and then Zakovsky leads him to Yanis, and then yeah. And then when we see him again in Cuba, it's a different kind of atmosphere there. But he's still so sort of effortless on the job, isn't he? He's like, you don't think he ever gets nervous about anything.
Mm.
Yeah, do you love it? He's more interested in the car than the fact that Natalia's in the background. Surely one thing's more distracting than the other, John.
Well, I mean, he does say that comment. Doesn't he first of all say, who's the broad? And then all of us, then he pulls over Pierce to the side and says, did you check that out?
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. You know, he's fully aware. He's got no filter whatsoever.
She's still in shock. I love it.
You know,
you probably hear this.
You know. Yeah, he's absolutely no filter at all. It's a bit Richard Keith, isn't it, really? You know?
The non-football audience, the American audience. Oh, look up Richard Keys on YouTube, could get quite problematic for the phrasing.
Yeah,
He's got a website actually.
Non-soccer. He does a blog.
I was looking at it today. Just calling out people. Very interesting, but yeah, prefer Andy Gray. That's the official take. And then of course we get him right at the end, don't we? Marines. It's lovely, isn't it? It's a lovely ending.
Yeah, well, I think the ending is a bit of a kind of spin on the whole, the one that was, Roger. Every time he's with the girl at the end, he's like discovered. And
well, we get it. Yeah. Brosnan really brought that back, didn't he? With Wei Lin, it's a bit more like that, isn't it? A bit more Spy Love Me-ish. Not as fun, it's not as a joke or anything. But then Wolves Not Enough is...
No, I know, and it's a bit more with on Tomorrow Never Dies. It's a bit more perilous because they're on some wreckage, and you know their only chance of survival is. But yeah, not that. Not,
we love
not
it.
That
we
I'm,
love it.
You know, not complaining too much.
And then
but shared bodily warmth is the what they learn on survival school, Matthew.
Very true. Very true.
And then we've got Dad with the diamonds. Basically, it's almost like a shot for shot remake of the end of. Well, there's enough, isn't it? The camera angle, everything. The David Arnold, same cue. Mm. Just why, if it ain't broke, don't break it. And then just to briefly mention, Tomorrow Never Dies, Bond comes off the... is it the helicopter he comes off, isn't he? And he's, like you say, in the Admiral uniform. And I can't even remember why he's needed. I've forgotten, I'm sorry.
Well, I think the CIA are involved because, I think, I might be wrong, but because... Because it's Vietnam.
Yeah.
I think that's... Oh, no, but they only realised that later on, so I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, when he's...
The new China news agency.
But it's glorious because you see Pierce in the Navy uniform.
Brilliant.
It would have been nice to see Tim in it. It would be nice to see Daniel in it, you know, to have that link.
That would be so good if he's in it.
Maybe. I'd like that very much.
Oh, dear. The Admiral Hargreaves outfit. That's what I call it, yeah. We move on to the other massive ally of the Pierce Brosnan era, Valentin Zukovsky. It is actually Wade who introduces Bond to Zukovsky.
Mm.
But of course, he didn't realise it was the guy... And there's more backstory, isn't there? But Bond didn't realise it was going to be the same guy who he shot previously. Mm. And my knee aches. Yeah. and all that scene, yeah. Yeah, so he's a former KGB agent turned mafia boss. But yeah, what a brilliant introductory scene. Absolutely brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah,
one of the best.
It is.
What a great character as well, like kind of a character who I suppose is more of the sort of classic characters of allies being within kind of the world of sort of espionage, but also criminal world at the same time, being, you know, now a mafia boss, which seems like an old school way of doing it. So what I love about GoldenEye is that he's able to pull out all the classic kind of tropes and stuff that from Fleming's kind of stories and some of the first kind of, you know, films and things, but absolutely make it. It's you know, so he is a crime boss. You know, the jokes about, I own helicopters or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, none that fly, you know.
Yeah, accepts it.
Walther PPK, 7.65 millimeter. Only three men I know use such a gun. I believe I've killed two of them.
Lucky me.
I think not. James Bond. Charming, sophisticated secret agent. Shaken, but not disturbed.
So you haven't lost your delicate sense of humor, Valentine, huh? All you need for an audience. I'm strangling the cat.
Strangling a cat.
That is Irina, my mistress. Very talented girl.
Irina! Take a hike!
So, Mr. Bond, what is it that brings you to my neighborhood? Hmm? Still working for MI6, or have you decided to join the 21st century? I hear the new M is a lady.
I want you to do me a favor.
He wants me to do him a favor. My knee aches every single day. Twice as bad when it is cold. You have any idea how long the winter lasts in this country? Huh? Come on, Dmitri.
Well, it depends.
Silence!
For an ex-KGB agent, you surprise me, Valentine. I'm sure someone of your stature must have realized the skill was not to hit your knee, but to miss the rest of you.
So why did you not kill me?
Call it professional courtesy.
And I should extend you the same courtesy.
Kiros Funeral Parlour, 4 o'clock this afternoon.
It's another brilliant example of you believe that this character exists outside of this, you know, the film the world that we present, you know, in the film. Yeah, I definitely think that. And I think they're pretty good with Bond for the supporting cast with like British actors. I think they cast them pretty well. And I think this is an example, you know, Robbie Coltrane, Scottish actor. We've seen him in lots of things on television and everything. But I think he's really good as Valentin Tsiolkovsky. I think believable, a decent blend of comedy, quite a lot of comedy in both of these appearances. But also some good moments with Pierce Brosnan's Bond, I think.
When I was talking last time about the Allies are put into three groups, and this is very much a contact of the contact. Mm. But this is an ally of convenience. You never get the impression, really, until the last scene in World Is Not Enough, that he even likes Bond.
Yeah,
there's this antagonism towards him both times, and he's not particularly happy. And then Bond gives him a piece of information, and each time it's like, I think you will know, but they have a drink, and then you sit down and they have some vodka together, and they discuss the mission. It's sensational. Valentin Tsiolkovsky goes right through.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He's putting through to the final. He's going to Istanbul or Villa Park. He's going there.
Again.
You know, he's
Not Maiden's Town, though. Did we put Wade through, though? Does Wade...
given a choice between the two, I think I would say no to Wade.
We'll go with Valentin.
Valentin, just because...
Yeah.
Even though we allowed all three allies from Living Daylight straight into the final. Can only have one from the entire Pierce Brosnan era. We're not biased for nothing on this show towards Timothy Dalton. So back to Valentin. I love the chuckling in the background from the goons, you know, in his bar.
Yeah,
I'll just I'll probably play that. That clip.
What's
he trying to say?
Well, do you know, I
the bars.
Yeah, well, I've only recently worked it out. What he says is, well, it depends.
All right.
And then he gets to cut off. That's
what did you say? Quiet. Or...
But it took me a while. It took me, you know, maybe
silence. So that's it. Yeah.
It you know, it took me close to 30 viewings of the film, maybe more, to work out what.
Oh dear me!
But that's it. What an introduction for a character.
Yeah.
Where, like, say, you go from Jack Wade, and then turn up that kind of run down sleazy bar, karaoke bar, and then that line, the whole what does he say about where he says the wolf of PPK? I know.
Yeah,
was it only three men I know? Yeah. You such a gun. I believe I've killed two of them. What a brilliant line!
Yeah, it is.
That is
lucky
like
me. Yeah,
perfect Bond dialogue. That. Yes. So straight off, you know that they've got history.
Yeah.
And then you hear, and then the character goes from, you know, with that opening line is, that's like peak Bond villain kind of dialogue, that. To then him sitting down and then becoming this kind of laughing stock, you know, where he suddenly, Bond sort of obviously gives all these examples of how he's not such a big deal in Russia anymore. He's not, you know, not as wealthy as he thinks he is or as powerful as he is. But also still threatening.
Yeah,
you know,
he shoots
the chair around him. Bond is really starting to panic.
Love the sound design.
And then for him to have a sense of humour as well. Yes. He talks about the singer. Just again, the comic timing in that scene is just is brilliant. Brosnan just firing on all cylinders in that. Yeah, just absolutely fantastic.
The dialogue in GoldenEye, for me, off the top of my head, is probably the best dialogue in any Bond film. And the way I think it, well, the way I think of it is that I quote that film more than any other film in the Bond franchise. Every single performance in it, Xenia, Orimov, Boris, Trevelyan.
Yeah. M.
Billy J. Mitchell.
M. Every. Lenya! Q, don't touch that, my lunch. That's my lunch. Zakovsky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Natalia, Boys with Toys. You know.
Yeah.
Every
Not
single.
A GoldenEye.
Every single character. Even Anna. You know, it would
have been
a woman if it sat on his face. Yeah, you know, and all that.
So good.
It's just so quotable. Mm. Oh, it's brilliant. Oh,
GoldenEye. Another one we're absolutely desperate to review, but deliberately saving it so we can really spend days and weeks and months. We've spent a long time on it now, you know, not meant to be you doing the Allies. And, By the time we get to World Is Not Enough, he seems to be doing a bit better. He's less failed. He's got this incredible... Well, he's got a caviar factory, and he's wearing better clothes. He's in a more, you know, exotic, maybe, part of the world.
Yeah.
He's got this gorgeous casino. He's got a crisper haircut. He's got a goatee. Yeah, he's doing... He's a bit bigger as well. So, you know, he's doing all right, isn't he? It's great to have him back, though, isn't it, in The World Is Not Enough, and it's just... The link, isn't it? Again,
yeah, and it's nice to have that link, not necessarily in consecutive films, but to sort of bring him back a film later. I really like that. And
Ladies of Lost Art,
like I say, this world that's going on outside. Yeah, like that.
Best Allies, Denham Elliot. Yeah. Chris, you weren't in the Twine review, were you? So, and it's one of your favourites, isn't it? So I'm assuming you like him in The World Is Not Enough, Zakovsky.
Oh yeah. Again, it's such a pleasure to see him, and he is, not only does he drive the plot, he sometimes, you know, his scenes are just that extra little shot in the arm, you know, because you're starting getting into that kind of maybe you know with the plot's getting a bit kind of complicated or you kind of maybe losing a bit of interest, and he comes along, and you know he's you know Robert Goldtree is such a great actor anyway, and obviously has got. You know, obviously his background mostly in sort of comedy, but he's able to make him, like I say, like in GoldenEye, he's threatening but also funny and believable, and is an interesting character. And it's nice for him to come back. And he isn't just the same. He's not like you say. He's actually his character is more successful. He's not just he's moved on. He's not just still in the same karaoke bar, you know, with the, you know, he's much more. He's the character's developed, and the fact, you know, and because he is so likable, it is genuinely sad when he dies. Even though when I watched it, I was like, no, I don't think he's dead. You know, it's quite. I thought it was quite shocking. I was genuinely surprised, and a bit of me was kind of hoping he would have turned up in the next one because it was always like a highlight.
Yeah.
You know, and it's nice, like you say, it's nice for Bond to have an ally and, you know, for them to have that kind of, like you said, just that banter, that back and forth made it much sort of really, really interesting. So, you know, it is a shame that he's not in anymore, but I reckon they could bring him back in for the next Bond. Oh. Interesting character.
Absolutely zero chance.
It's nice that his last act, you know, when we're talking about a Bond ally, is to...
Yeah.
Save Bond, basically. Otherwise, he's dead, really. So that's nice.
Because until then, you'd have the sort of double crossing, perhaps, you know, with Goldie and all that, and he put him in the caviar. So it was still getting a bit, not sure whether how this is going to end, and is he still the goodie and baddie.
Yeah.
I think he's always respected Bond, hasn't he? Quietly. Even the decision to sort of say, Irina, take a hike. He's almost, well, because Bond said it, then maybe should listen to him.
True.
The ending of Sikorsky, as similarities to Saunders in some ways, in terms of that it's a realization that I'm just going to give you that mutual respect just before I die. And that little smirk on his face just when he passes away is just, and Brosnan's gorgeous, like, he's choking, but he just gives a little nod back to it.
Yeah.
With sound effects, obviously.
You're choking as well, Johnny.
Choking! Sorry, I'm
just choking. He's choking.
Great rounded character, great story.
Who are you? And how did you get in? I'll call security and congratulate them. Drink?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can't you just say hello like a normal person?
Get lost. No, down the back. What's your business with Electra King?
I thought you were the one giving her the business.
She drops $1 million in your casino and you don't even blink an eye. What's she paying you off for,
You know, if I were you, a relationship with a man like that, I wouldn't bet on it.
Honestly, when you think back at the Brosnan films, I know everyone keeps going about Die Another Day, which, when I first saw it at the cinema, I thought there was so much that I liked, but also it's like, oh gosh, this is really silly, this is really pushing out. But then I think, in the context of Bond films over the years, you know, he did go into space, but I didn't really question it that much, even as a kid. So I thought, I can believe, you know, invisible cars, it's not that much of a stretch, is it really? You know, they can do that. I think the army have those kind of, like, predator suits, don't they, now, that they've been developing. So really, the technology is available. Yes, some of the dialogue is absolutely abysmal, but you know,
really,
again, I can let it go. So I was disappointed, but when you look back at what those four films, and obviously particularly that, you know, the first three Brosnan ones, that is a high standard Bond and production and filmmaking, and making it again contemporary but tying it into the history of Bond and everything that comes with it, and just talking about every time you watch it, because we're too stuck on Die Another Day and everyone forgets. Like, I going back and watching Tomorrow Never Dies, which I always thought was like, yeah, well, it's not as good as GoldenEye or The World Is Not Enough, but going back, it's like, it's such a solid Bond film,
really is.
You know, and it's not perfect, but it's so enjoyable. It rattles along at such a great pace.
Yeah,
great dialogue, funny balance of humour and action is just, and I just can't understand with the people who write off Brosnan as this sort of, I don't know, lightweight or he can't act, because I don't see that at all. I think he's a decent actor. He's not the best actor in the world, but he can deliver the goods. Anyway, that's my...
No.
100% agree.
Couldn't agree with you more, yeah.
You don't have to be a great actor to be Bond. I stand by it.
No.
You have to look the part, and you have to be passionate about it. And if you give it everything you've got, that's all they want. People just want... Without going all Rob, he's an aspirational character. You want to be suave, sophisticated, and just give it all you've got.
I think now there's a snobbishness to... movie stardom as opposed to actor. Every actor has to be, you know, brilliant, and the next role, you know, you have to do an indie film, the next film, and, you know, I'm not knocking that, and I'm sure, you know, if you are an actor that, you know, you want to challenge yourself and everything, and like I say, you know, that's great. But there does seem to be a snobbishness about sort of movie stars and the ability to, you might not be completely different in every role, but every time you're in it, you bring some, I don't know, a real presence and a real, you know, that X factor that's so hard to capture, you know, you can't recreate it.
So die up.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I think that there is the difference between, you know, actors and then, you know, movie actors. And I think Brosnan is a movie actor. You know, you look at his career, you look at everything from, like, Mrs. Doubtfire and the stuff that he did leading up to that, the TV, you know, and stuff when he was round about, you know, Dante's Peak and, you know, the Thomas Cranfer remake. These are great performances. And because he has presence, you know, he doesn't have to be... But I never see him as... He's not a bad actor. I know there's other stars, considerably much more, you know, high-profile stars, and other more highly regarded actors who've won awards, who I think are terrible actors, because you can see them working, you know.
Dare say Nicolas Cage.
because he understands acting for film, and he understands what he's doing when he's in it. And I think that's the difference. I'm not going to get into the Daniel Craig thing.
But I didn't mean him.
I think there's certain actors who can, who can be good actors, but not necessarily suit the role. And I think Brosnan was a perfect fit for that role. Yeah. And he might never win an Oscar for acting, but he puts it in. He has also chosen lots of interesting kind of film and TV work since then. I would love to see him turn up in a Christopher Nolan film, or, you know, a filmmaker who understands his strengths, which is, as he's getting older, he has even more, he's even more interesting on screen. You know, I watched that Eurovision.
brilliant
in it.
Yeah.
I was watching thinking, why can't we, I want to see Brosnan in everything, but that beard, he looks amazing.
He's loving it as well. He's absolutely loving it.
Exactly, and the you know, Mamma Mia gives it everything. He's not. No one's going to go out and buy Pringles and go and watch him. You know, but he gives it, and you know what? Absolute credit to Brosnan, who isn't a singer, and it's quite clear he isn't a singer, but belts it out with the rest of them. And how scary must that be? You know, that is dedication. That, so I will defend Brosnan in Bond and beyond.
Yes,
good man, Chris. Good man.
It's sort of all that kind of thing for me starts with the Dick Van Dyke, Mary Poppins. Well, he can't do the accent, but how lovable in the role, how much charisma has the guy got, and he does it. That's far more difficult to get on screen.
Absolutely.
I don't know how many accents Brosnan's done. I mean, I don't even know what his own accent is, really. It's a bit of everything, isn't it? But all these people, they're all versions of themselves, aren't they, in every film? You know, Connery is, Roger Moore is.
Connery is 100%.
I mean, maybe Dalton and Craig maybe can do more range, can't they? But we still need to see this famous Hawks film that Steve Clamp has championed. We really have got with a funny, what was it, like a comic relief nose on the front cover. Oh gosh, the Brosnan era. We were so blessed. And I do think part of that is the likability with the Allies, like we've said. Those people he admires. Because when you see Bond being matey with others, I don't know, it just gives him a bit more... Well, he doesn't need more likability, Brosnan, but it's like even more.
To me, they made a decision to make entertaining films.
That was
the priority to me. We want to make blockbuster films. So for all the criticisms of Tomorrow Never Dies, that is wall-to-wall action, that film.
Yeah.
And they said, that is what we're going to do. We're not going to go for it to be a critic's darling.
No.
We're not going to do any of that. We're not going to look into the psychology of Bond. We are here to entertain people. And that's what they did. And I watched Die Another Day for the first time in 10 years, 2 weeks ago. Listen, it's a car crash in many ways, but you can never, ever, ever say it's not entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
It is pure entertainment from start to finish. It's not like Quantum of Solace, which is a better made film,
yeah,
but it's not enjoyable at all. Give me Die Another Day to watch every time.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Well. Oh, no,
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Two misunderstood films. Right.
Which brings us on to Die Another Day, doesn't it?
It does. It's a great sieve, John. You've unintentionally got us actually on the point of this episode. And the point is Mr. Chang.
how Mr. Chang has managed to changle his way onto he's not in it.
Better say who he is, because I think most people will just think of Moonraker, won't they, when they hear the name Chang.
and then in Tournament of Eyes, General Chang. For some reason they can't think of new names.
Well, Carver.
Well, yeah,
it's very babyish. So is he going through then?
Chang. Yeah.
Oh, Durant. Zukovsky.
Oh, no.
Zukovsky.
Yeah, Zukovsky, of course he is. Yeah, absolutely.
Zukovsky's got to go.
Zukovsky's a no-brainer.
You know about Chang, yeah? does the average listener know who Chang is? Can somebody, John, you saw it most recently. Can you just tell us who the guy is first?
Yeah, so Chang is the guy who initially is behind the reception when Brosnan walks in with his pyjamas into the... I mean, that in itself is amazing. With his
iconic.
Yeah, looking like he's come out of the Bible with that hair on the earth. Yeah. But then, obviously... Yeah. But then...
oh, dear me.
Evan Almighty.
Yeah, it's very Evan Almighty, And then obviously it's the homage to From Russia with Love, as he is filming behind the mirror whilst Pierce is trying it on with Peaceful Fountains of Desire. Yeah.
What was that article, John, you had? Is it 50 homages in Die Another Day? There's so many, aren't there? Because it was the
100.
Oh, 100, yeah, well, okay. It was the 50th anniversary, wasn't it? But
100, yeah.
So we got 100. And then everyone will be like...
I mean, some of them were very tenuous.
The least Bond film has got the most Bond homages. No, it's all about tone. This is really interesting. I read this about Mr. Chang. I'm not just panning this out for no reason. The character was originally meant to have been Wei Lin, quite babyish. But,
I think I read that, yeah.
I wouldn't have minded that as much as Pam Bouvier, because I think Wei Lin is more probably, I don't know, she's still going to be dedicated to a job long after she's finished with Bond.
Yeah.
And they could have had just like a quick little back and forth banter, and it would have probably worked.
Yeah.
And it's within the
Brosnanverse.
Universe, isn't it? Yeah, Brosnanverse. Yeah.
There's nobody's going to
see that. I mean, they're going to announce the expansion of the Brosnanverse. Like MCU. You
know. The Bakerverse. The Don
a
Baker.
TV series. Mr. Chang and Wei Lin.
Yeah.
Chang
and Chang. Dear me. So Mr. Chang is...
Be like Fawlty Towers.
Yeah. We move on to a genuine ally, Raoul, who Bond meets in Havana. I think he is a British spy. You know, we know the word babyish is used a lot, but being the manager of a cigar factory in Havana is the definition of babyish, as far as I'm concerned.
Wouldn't change it for the world.
No.
This is pretty old school Bond, though, isn't it? The scene on the decking and the cigar. Thinking it. This film's quite good up till now. This is all right.
Yeah, I agree. And you feel like you're there. You feel like you're in the location, and that he is from that. And I like that sort of rooftop, you know, area where he's chatting to Bond, and he's absolutely loving that cigar. He's really chomping away on it, or whatever you do with a cigar. But yeah, he's loving it. I think he's a memorable, one of the most real characters in the whole thing.
You were real.
I come to think the delectados would never be smoked. They are particularly hazardous for one's health, Mr.
Bond.
Mr. Bond. Do you know why?
It's the addition of the Velada tobacco. Slow burning. It never goes out.
Just like a sleeper.
Sorry for the rude awakening.
I love my country, Mr. Bond.
I'd never ask you to betray your people. I'm after a North Korean.
A tourist?
A terrorist.
One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
Zhao has no interest in other people's freedom.
Have you seen it recently, Math?
I reckon I saw it maybe about 18 months ago or something like that. Yeah. And there was a spell. Tom Dremel went to America and was staying with. And it was on, you know, in actually, we get it a bit more like this these days. But like in America, when a film's on, like, goes on to TV, like they put it on,
It was on
a few nights successively. Yeah. And so, like, I think
Stars.
We watched it like three times in three nights or something. And
in America,
And they have way more, they have way more ad breaks. Oh, so, you know, it's like 8 minutes and then ad break, and then 8 minutes, you know, it's pretty relentless. But when a film's that good, you can't not. No, but I think they were, in fact, they were American family, so they sort of loved the idea of Bond and us being there, British. And also, we filmed our own James Bond with them there as well. They had. It all tied in nicely.
That was probably before Casino Royale came out, wasn't it? Just before, maybe.
Yes, it was. It was 2006, the summer of 2006.
So I don't know what, you know, we were in a bit of flux, like, oh, heck, what's happening with Bond? So I think we sort of forced ourselves to sort of see the positives in Die Another Day after quite a few viewings then, didn't we?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, well aware of the negatives, you know, of which there are many. But I don't know. I think we were just able to say, you know, it's just... In that, again, in those circumstances, because there were three lads, weren't there, who were a bit younger than us.
Yeah.
Like, if you put that film on, it's going to entertain them, really. It's not going to, you know.
Has Ernie seen that, Chris?
He has. He enjoyed it. He's not as gripped as he is with, like, other...
Moonraker.
Yeah, Moonraker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's...
Taste.
I don't know, because I thought of all of them, because it would be the one that... Obviously, there was, like, you know, the Let's Feast scene. We skipped over and stuff like that. But I thought he would love it, absolutely love it, because it is the most, like you say, babyish. You know, it is Invisible Car, it's an ice palace and things like that. But he liked it. He preferred Tomorrow Never Dies.
He's an action man.
You know. Don't know. Well, yeah.
I've got a slight confession to make. When I watched Die Another Day,
oh yeah,
I preferred the second half.
Oh my word, John!
It's like when I said that about Casino Royale, was these controversial takes. Yeah.
I don't buy into this whole thing of the first half is good. I think there's good premise to it, but I still think it's like not executed very well. And I actually prefer the second half, where the know that it's absolutely ridiculous and they just notch it up to 10. I think it's far more self-aware then. And I look at the first half and I go, oh, if only. You know, if they'd have just changed this, this could have been a good film.
Mm.
Whereas the second half, I'm just like, well, we know this is rubbish, so let's just enjoy it. And I actually found the second half so much more enjoyable.
This is brilliant. There's progress. There's love in all of them, isn't there, somewhere? Well, at least one of us likes every single Bond film.
Yeah. And I think that if Netflix had the Bond films, I'm not sure I'd watch anything else.
Yeah.
So true.
They are on TV for a lot at the moment.
Now, when I was talking about it, I want to watch Die Another Day.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because there is that. And that's what I always loved about them, was that even if that Bond film wasn't your favourite, you knew that there's another one coming out that you could be excited about, and or you had another 20 or 18 other Bond films to go back to. That's one thing I've always loved about the series, is that it reflects your mood and your choices and the time. It's like, oh, I want something a bit 70s. I want kind of, you know, something a bit gritty, or,
so true,
you know, kind of, you know, a really sort of sophisticated.
Yeah.
spy thriller. You know, you've got everything. Or I want something ridiculous like Die Another Day. Why not?
I want Die Another Day.
Just, like well, say, you can just take it for that's what it is. Quote
from the. there's no shame. No, I agree. So yes, Raoul. again, I couldn't remember.
That. Send him through.
Name. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, he gets in, and Jack Wade doesn't get through.
Good. Yeah.
The other character in Die Another Day, the other ally, is the CIA. Jinx's boss, apparently. A tragic waste of Michael Madsen, maybe. I mean, it's not really.
I think.
Damien Falco.
Oh, I just.
Chris is going to diss Michael Madsen now. Prefers his sister, yeah.
Yeah.
I just think he's just playing himself, isn't he? He's not acting. He's just. And he just. For me. I just don't know what possessed him to cast him in a Bond film. Honestly, because you've got all the, you know, obviously you associate him with Tarantino, even, you know, even though he didn't do, well, he only did one film with him.
Two. He's done Hateful Eight as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Up until then.
So, yeah. But you associate him with that kind of filmmaking, you know, and so when I saw him, I was like, all right, that's quite an interesting. he throws me out of the film. Honestly, he really does throw me.
Unlike
out.
Madonna.
But
Yeah, no.
She grabbed.
Oh, John's going, oh, God, wait a minute.
The fencing scene was my absolute favourite part of the whole film.
Oh, well, yeah.
It is great. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. No, half and half.
The fact remains that you deliberately misled me by implicating Bond. You told us about your agent in the Cuban clinic.
She'd be dead already. Your mole would have made sure of that.
We wouldn't have had a mole at all if you'd disclosed the fact that Miss Frost and Moon were on the Harvard fencing team together. Knowing who to trust is everything in this business.
Well, well, James Bond. Just in time for the fireworks. Let's get down to business.
I think he is miscast. I think it's a bit distracting.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit distracting. It would have been nice for someone, you know, like Bruce Greenwood or someone like that. You know,
What a shot!
Someone like that. Anyway, who you can picture? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could be a CIA. Like, whereas Damien Falco, I don't know, it's just
gangster name.
Doesn't quite work. Like him, him being the equivalent of Judy Dench's M. Does not
growling.
Doesn't work. It's not great.
My knowledge of Michael Madsen goes not much beyond Tarantino and Celebrity. And he does seem like very similar in every role, really. I mean, everyone praises Mr. Blonde, and then I watched Celebrity Big Brother, and I just realised that I think Tarantino just said, just talk to the camera, you know, just be yourself, and then when we'll roll it out. I agree completely that it's miscast. He tries playing it with, like, how he brooding lines, how he says it a bit sleazy, and it's just like, it's completely distracting. It's completely distracting. It's not needed at all.
Enough distraction in that film. Already. But his sister, Chris, in Candyman.
She's a good actress. Yeah. I watched her in a film I hadn't seen before, Sideways. I watched that.
It's good Sideways,
Lives
up to the hype.
It is, really good. And she was really good in that. But yeah, Candyman.
Wasn't she in the first series of Designated Survivor?
Ooh.
I'm pretty sure she was. She became the vice president. In the first series.
Is that the one with Kiefer Sutherland?
And she was first series. Absolutely superb, and it went downhill very quickly after that. But no, she's very, very watchable in that as well.
So she might have been. I mean, it might have been a bit strange having her. Yeah. She might have been better than.
Yeah, you were better than.
She's going through to the final. That's it. That's the Pierce Brosnan era. I think we've done far too much, perhaps. On no, you can never say that about this podcast.
If you're enjoying Really 007. Why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram? Look us up at Really007Pod.
The Daniel Craig era. There's no script here. We're not going to offend anyone. I don't know what anyone's going to say. I know that there's someone in particular who isn't on this episode tonight who might have been a bit more negative about one of the characters, because we're not doing Felix. But like I say, I wouldn't really have much to say about Felix, to be honest, even though he's been in two of the films. Hopefully, by the time we've seen No Time to Die, we can have a bit more. We'll know a bit more about him, maybe, and we'll be able to actually say more than a few sentences on him. But Casino Royale, we get introduced to
a longtime friend of Bond in the books, René Mathis. I think he's in the French Secret Service in the book, but he's working for MI6 in the film. He was also in From Russia with Love, the novel. So that's quite crisp, you know, an overlap in the Fleming verse. He comes into it, well, I don't know, maybe halfway through Casino Royale, when we get to Prague, posing as Montenegro.
Yeah.
Carlo Viveri.
My name is Mathis, René Mathis. I'm your contact here.
Does he know we've been watching him?
Le Chiffre? I don't think so. Probably because there's no we, just me. I'm afraid if you get into trouble here, the cavalry won't be coming over the nearest hill. The chief arrived yesterday and spent the time re-establishing all the relationships. The chief of police and he are now quite close. That's him, with the moustache, over my left shoulder.
Well, that could make life quite difficult.
And quite possibly shorter. He's not a very subtle man. I thought about trying to buy services, but we frankly couldn't afford to outbid the chief. I hate to say it, but the accountants seem to be running MI6 these days. Oh, not that I have anything against accountants. Many of them are lovely people. So I decided that it was cheaper to supply his deputy with evidence that we were bribing the chief. It's amazing what you can do with Photoshop these days, isn't it? I think your odds are improving, Mr. Bond.
Again, I will actually, I'll go to Chris first.
I can't actually remember that much about his character in either of those films, apart from his demise. All I remember is that Giancarlo Giannini, is it? Giannini or whatever.
Giannini.
Is an excellent actor who has loads of screen presence. Also one of the highlights of Ridley Scott's Hannibal. I think he's great. I think he's a great character. I say, it's such a shame that given that he is an ally who is in a lot of the original novels, for him to be this quite small kind of derivative, and then obviously his, like I say, his death being quite unfortunate. But yeah, I as an actor, I think he's great. The character, like I say, it's been so long since I've watched Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, so I'm probably not the best person to
put you off.
Pass comment on this. Yeah. Maybe should we dial Robin?
Yeah. or just discuss Hannibal? No.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
As I said in the episode, I think he's great in terms of he's a really charismatic character. There's touches of Kevin Bay in there in terms of his appreciation for the ladies, that kind of older statesman kind of thing about him. He obviously has good links because he gets Michael Wilson arrested. You know, so he obviously has good links, you know. There's lots to like about him. I'm still confused to this day. Is he an ally or is he a villain at the end of Casino Royale? And it's still not entirely clear what, you know, that whole setup. We know that obviously Vesper Lynd betrayed Bond, but still the whole lines with Le Chiffre saying your friend Mathis is my friend Mathis. And then at the end where it says, Judi Dench says, well, Mathis was obviously innocent, and Bond just says no, it just means it wasn't him. So it's still a bit like, you know, what does this mean? But then obviously you get onto Quantum and Solace, and he's quite blatantly an ally. But I'm not necessarily convinced that they'd written him as an ally by the end of it. I think they might have actually just taken that. They left it open-ended, and they took it that we'll take him into the next film as an ally. He's very likeable. He's very charismatic. He's slightly annoying when he's commentating on the poker game. He is slightly annoying with that. It's like, shut up, mate. You know, we know there's $150 million in the game. Let the man concentrate who's actually got the cards, as opposed to you rabbiting on. But no, you know what? He's good. I like him.
Do you think it's a bit like the start of The Spy Who Shagged Me? You know, yes, Vanessa, she was a fembot. Yeah. Yes, we knew all along. Quantum of Solace. Oh, yeah, Manalo now. Yeah. Because it's set directly after, so. So it is quite quickly done, isn't it?
I really like him. Yeah, he's brilliant in Hannibal, Giancarlo Giannini. I think he's really good in this. I think whilst him and Daniel Craig do have a bit of chemistry, they don't have, like, you're not necessarily sure that they're best friends, you know, when they meet and everything. So that plays into the idea of whether he can trust him or not. I'm not particularly comfortable with the way that Bond treats him and speaks and thinks about him at the end. I get that it's like he can't trust anyone, you know, because of Vesper and everything, but I don't particularly like it, that there's no remorse that, yeah, well, just because it wasn't him who did it. Well, you just had him dragged away, you know, unceremoniously, you know, on some grass and everything. Anyway.
That's so odd, that. Yeah,
yeah, and then, so I find that even more jarring that I don't know why he's his ally when it comes to, I think it's mentioned briefly when it comes to Quantum of Solace, but it'd be like, you got me arrested. Yeah. You know what, you can't just turn up here and yeah. So I did eventually watch Quantum of Solace recently, perhaps not in the best frame of mind, but I did watch it. The scene, you know, we've discussed, and Rob in particular has discussed about the scene of him, his death. Bond putting me in the skip and then nicking his wallet, or the nicking the money from his wallet. But I was even more, because I knew that was coming, I was even more struck by, I can't even remember why, what's going on, but Bond's in a car with Camille, and then they get pulled over by some police, and then they open the boot and he's there in the boot, isn't he, Mathis? Yeah. And then, like, Bond sort of hugs him, and then while he's hugging him, these policemen shoot him. They shoot Mathis. Sorry, I'm laughing. And then Bond, to defeat these this heroic figure, this aspirational figure of Bond, to defeat these policemen, chucks the dying body of Mathis into one of them and defeats the policeman like that. So I hate it. I don't like that at all. I don't like the way, like I say, he chucks the body into one of them and then. Yeah, it's quite touching, but I don't particularly buy it because of everything that happened in Casino Royale. I don't particularly buy that there would be this. And then the skip, we've talked about it. It's awful. And I know, well, what's he supposed to do with a body? You know, he might have done that with Saunders' body or something like that. Well, I don't think he would have done, and we don't see that. So why should we make that presumption?
Showing back,
we see him do this.
Chase Necro.
And even... Even Camille makes a comment about it. It's a real shame.
Right, this.
There's a hospital on the other side of town.
Please. Stay with me. Stay here, please. Please.
Come here. It's okay.
Yeah. That's better. That doesn't hurt.
Is Mathis your cover name?
Yes.
Not a very good one, is it?
Do we forgive each other? I shouldn't have left you alone. First of all, she gave everything for you. Forgive her. Forgive yourself.
I think he's a decent character. It doesn't end well in both films, to be honest.
The scenes before that, the middle bit, people seem to forget the cozy rooftop, you know, bottle of wine with his,
yeah,
what's his girlfriend called? If she's got like a really English name, yeah, or something. Like Karen or,
yeah, is it like Natasha or something? Danielle is it Danielle?
Well, that's quite cozy. I think that stretch from there and, yeah, you know, and on the plane, it's quite cozy for Craig. I think it's quite...
I know my best sort of here what you mean.
For the Craig fans, I'm trying...
Yeah, I have to say, Quantum of Solace is one of the least cozy films I've ever begin
the
bit,
the
to...
The night flight at the bar, it's cozy.
So what's keeping you awake?
I was wondering why you came with me.
It takes something to admit you were wrong.
You want a sleeping pill?
No.
Pain pill? No. I have pills for everything. Some make you taller. Some make you forget. I'm going to try and get some sleep.
Good idea.
I will. I am going to watch them again. I might try and watch them back to back.
As intended.
I watched Skyfall and Spectre back to back.
As not intended.
Yeah, so I might try and watch Casino Royale and Quantum back to back sometime. Because it has been a long time since you watched either.
Well, is everyone going to watch them all in, you know, in anticipation of No Time to Die, so that they're all in our memory, because it'll all be linked?
Yeah, I might just watch Spectre then.
Yeah, I think I'll watch Spectre.
I'm sorry, I can only apologise. Quantum, John, any the binning scene.
My thoughts on the bin. I'm not as irate about it as the rest of my podcast contributors. It's consistent with the portrayal that Daniel Craig's of Bond that Daniel Craig's doing, isn't it? I don't like it. My issue with Quantum is that, as I've said on the thing, I'm a massive Casino Royale fan, because I think you can have that as a one-off and then you can interpret the end where it says Bond, James Bond, as in, right, he is Bond now. Mm-hmm. Let's go for it. And that's what I want.
We do.
And that's why I rank Casino Royale very highly, because I can separate that from the rest of the films that was made individually. It certainly wasn't decided in 2006 that the effects of Casino Royale are going to be intertwined in 2015 Spectre. You know, I can take that separately. But Quantum of Solace just goes down an absolute rabbit hole for me. That's the issue in terms of where it takes it. It doesn't lead anywhere. It just makes him this angry man who has got a chip on each shoulder. You know, and very, very, very dislikable. So what I'll say is at least the throwing in the bin is consistent with the film. It's not tonally all over the place, but I don't necessarily like it.
It's just going to be me and Steve Clamp, I think. You know, the sort of mini Quantum Defenders left. It's not as bad as you think. You know, no, we're not like, it's a great Bond film.
I can see that. There are some, you know, as we say with lots of things, there are some good bit, you know, there are some good elements to it, but I just don't think it's the overall feeling, the overall character of Bond that I just really struggle with, and it leaves a sort of nasty taste in the mouth of the film.
Absolutely.
Cozy snow at the end, you've got it all.
To be honest, I quite like what he looks like at the end. He's got he's got a suit on, he's got a nice long coat, and he's got leather gloves and the Walther. I think he looks quite, you know, crisp there.
We always get mixed up between the end of that and the girl with the dragon tattoo when he puts the jacket in the... No, she puts the jacket in the bin, does she? It's all linked. Daniel Craig... Does she get a gift?
The Craig universe.
She gets a gift for him and then she doesn't bother giving it him.
She gets the motorbike
jacket. Yeah, because she sees him, like, kissing so good, Robin Wright.
What a film. Goodness me.
Yeah.
Better than Mank, is it, Chris? just goading again.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, who are the Mank defenders? I don't know any of them. But there is one more ally that I've written down in the Craig films, because obviously we're not doing Felix, and I don't think there are many more that I can think of other than Kincaid. He's more of a civilian in a way. I'm obsessed with that word, isn't he? But he is an ally because, of course, he presumably Bond knows him from his past.
Well, I mean, I suppose he is an ally because he could quite easily just say, you've sold this place, get lost.
Yeah.
You don't have to. He doesn't need to stay there and to do his best in supporting Craig and what's she protecting Emma, you know,
and the Labradors. Yeah. I got one myth right.
Yes,
the Labradors. Yeah.
Emma. Is there another highlight in the film? Isn't it?
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, I like him. You know, it's interesting to have a character introduced into a film so late into a film. Yeah. Really like Albert Finney. It could become a little jarring if you start to think too much that it probably supposed to be Sean Connery. But I like it. I think it's quite interesting, you know, an older guy. We don't see Craig's Bond with so many older men, do we? You know, in the same way, there's no Q who's older. Well, yeah, but I bet mainly because of Q. But and obviously M's a female M for most of his films. I like Kincaid. His backstory isn't forced upon you. Nope. You know, it's not like, oh, it's actually, you know, Silver turned out that he killed Kincaid's family, and, you know, there's none of that, thankfully. Mm. So yeah, you get what you see, if you know what I mean.
Does he live nearby, or is he actually the custodian, or would
presume
he's got the keys to it? Or
I thought he was like, was he not the groundskeeper? Yeah,
gamekeeper.
Like when Bond was a kid.
Yeah.
So that's
he must but he's be. Still knocking about there when when they arrive. He's
getting sold. What's he doing?
Because like when Bond and M stop, you know, on the road just to get that shot, that for Deacons to do that shot, they sort of say, "What a shithole," or something like that, don't they? I mean, it's just awful. And I feel sorry for Kincaid. You know, all right, you know, one man trying to do the upkeep in this massive mansion in the middle of nowhere. Give me a chance, you know.
So who is it we're supposed to be fighting?
No, we in it, Kincaid. This is not your fight.
Try and stop me, you jumped up little shit. Now, remember what I taught you, don't let it pull to the left.
I'll do my best.
What did you say you did for a living?
We get the Home Alone ending, which is funny to see Emma and Kincaid sort of walking at 2 miles an hour, escaping bullets, and it's a bit more lighthearted, isn't it? Is it meant?
Yeah, Kincaid's a good character. Kincaid's a great guy.
Yeah,
you know, he gets involved, he gets stuck in. He's resourceful. You know, he's got
good
shot.
I don't mind that either.
because that's consistent with this groupie Bond.
Yeah.
Not very likable. Yeah, excellent impression, yeah. And I said this on the podcast, but I love his face of despair when he sees that dying. Yeah. You know, he
notices, doesn't he? And he.
Yeah. I'd be tempted to put him through. I actually
above Mathis. Yeah.
Well, I would above Mathis, because there's less confusion. He's there and I like Mathis, but he does his role. And that's it.
You could have one. Craig.
He's gone. Then you know you don't hear anything else about that. You could quite easily he could quite happily just go off in the Highlands and buy a home and carry on living his life. Then there's no, and I like that. There doesn't have to be a bookend to every single character in it.
I agree.
It's quite crisp how he. I don't know. He sort of admires M and he's like trying to help her, isn't he? Take her to the chapel and he's just like, what a crisp guy.
Yeah, nice guy.
And he doesn't die. Which is always a bonus.
No. Well, I think had he died, it would have distracted a bit from M's death.
Yeah.
I think that would have been
Have these.
So he'd have to mourn over Kincaid, you know, and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I go through weird spells with Skyfall. One minute I think, do you know what? When I'm talking about it now, I'm thinking, it is pretty damn good, isn't it? You know, it's a good film. And then if you just sort of distract, you know, just take it like that and just think about it, it's when you start thinking about how it was made in response to Batman and all the comparisons and the thing, it could have been even better. I think that's especially so though with Spectre, isn't it? I think it was might have been Steve Spring who was saying, you know, on paper, how could it go wrong? I don't mean the storyline, as in you've got Christoph Waltz coming back as Blofeld and you've got a blank sheet of paper, you don't have to link it with any of the others. You could, you know, you really could have had a brilliant last film for Craig, which it was meant to be, wasn't it, in many ways.
I think the Christoph Waltz casting was a problem.
As Blofeld, if he was cast as just a normal villain.
As Blofeld.
Yeah.
Well, my issue with his casting, and I think Christoph Waltz is a superb actor, but what they asked him to do was just do a PG version of Hans Landa.
They
just looked at that character and thought, we love these monologues that Hans Landa but they completely missed that the purpose of those monologues is at the end of every scene, something harrowing happens. The monologue is a lead up to actually the climax.
Wouldn't work, would it?
Exactly. You can't do that. Tarantino films are 18s for a reason. They decided, we like these monologues, we'll keep the monologues in, but they'll just go nowhere. That, to me, is the big problem with Waltz, is that they've quite blatantly picked him because of that performance, but then they've taken out the important part that makes those monologues more effective. And what you get is this ineffective Blofeld, who, for all the talking that he does, actually ultimately gets arrested because James Bond can shoot down a helicopter with one shot of a hand.
The script.
Just something I wanted to mention. I like... you know, I think villains doing monologues, okay, it might be a bit cliche, but I quite like it, and I really like Silvers in Skyfall. But I don't think it's always necessary. You know, I watched A View to a Kill yet again recently. And, like, Zorin doesn't have loads of dialogue and he doesn't have any monologues or anything, but you see it through what he's doing and everything. And I was watching it recently and thinking, he is a psychopath, he is a sociopath. Like, the way he views things is completely different to what, you know, your average person views things. And I think it works really well, and you don't have to have monologues and you know, OTT dialogue to achieve that. And so having had Silver, they didn't need to try and sort of repeat it again with Waltz in some ways, but like you say, John, but, you know, right, well, he was brilliant as Hans Lander in Glorious Bastards, so let's just kind of airlift that into a Bond film and make him Blofeld.
Could have had him as an ally, like in Django. Kind of copied that character. Possibly. Tarantino doing a Bond film, discuss, you know, if you want to really go on and on. Like his films. Oh.
Non-canon, you know, non...
Yeah.
Non-eon.
Okay, yeah.
Tarantino's Never Say Never Again.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see, but I think it'd be quite a lot to deal with and...
Michael Madsen.
You know, scenes of dialogue that are like 25 minutes long or however many. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It works really well for his films, but for a Bond film, not sure.
Babyishly have Uma Thurman as the
yeah. yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson will be the CIA director.
Kurt Russell?
trying to keep this. Kurt Russell would be the Kincaid in the film, 100%.
This is getting better.
Actually,
yeah, it's sounding
good now, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
But he might have to...
Yeah, come on. Tarantino,
non-Eon. He might have to make it a bit longer than his usual films, because, you know, the new one's 2¾ hours.
He'd have to find a role for Tim Roth.
Yeah,
Tim Roth.
He'd be great. In Rob Roy, he's an absolutely brilliant baddie, isn't he? That's an underrated film.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
He would have been a good James Bond.
Tim Roth's an absolute legend.
He's a psychopath. Yeah. I don't mean the guy. I mean he's a good psychopath. Okay, well we'll send Kincaid through. So just to quickly round out the episode, I'll just go over the ones I've written down. So we've got, in chronological order, obviously, we've got Quarrel, we've got Karen Bay, we've got Tiger Tanaka, Draco, J.W. Pepper. You know, the first four, like, absolute classic allies, no complaints. What do I mean? Genuine. Okay. This is his episode. This is his time to shine, isn't it? What else is he going to... Gogol. We've got Gogol. We've got, it must be, Columbo. VJ. We've got Tibbet. And then the three from Living Daylight, Saunders, Pushkin, and Cameron Shaw. And then we've got the only one from Brosnan, Zukovsky, and the only one from Craig, Kincaid.
So Kincaid's got in ahead of the rhyming Jack Wade.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just for a bit of, you know.
I'm not sure about
that. Yeah,
try and have one from each of you.
There should be a Craig one in, but...
Who do you think might have a chance of winning out of those?
Kieran Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saunders.
Saunders, we're going to have to
do... Saunders.
We give him a real push.
Yeah.
Do some viral marketing campaign.
Draco.
VJ might have a bit of
Columbo. Draco would do all right. Columbo would do well. Anyone with Tash.
Zukovsky
could do okay. Pepper.
He's the wild card, as you said, John. Yeah.
You just see JW Pepper on Twitter retweeted all the time.
That might do it for him, yeah. Oh dear. We've got the actual VJ Amitrage is on Twitter, you know, same person, so if you know he could do. Thank you guys for this. Been a very odd episode. It's very odd when you sort of look at the whole all of the films, isn't it? It's just makes you think what an amazing series it is and what variety we've had. And we do like the variety, don't we? We like the different tones of the Bond films. We like the different tones of the Allies. I think we can all be thankful. And hopefully, in the future, we'll see some more. No Time to Die, we'll have Felix. Probably in a more prominent scenes than he was in the first two, Casino and Quantum of Solace. But, yeah,
Oh, well, yeah, Ana de Armas, possible ally.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ana de Armas and Nomi, Lashana Lynch. So
yeah, yeah. But we're not including double agents in this list.
No, no, I know, but we won't include Felix either, so...
No, so just Anna Diallo.
You're not going to get me on that.
But then, no, she's a Bond girl. Presumably she won't... Well, I wonder whether there'll be any romance. Just because it's a woman doesn't mean it has to be. Right, we will be back
thank with you.
More episodes. Thank you for listening. Good evening, gents. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Getting less enthused with each episode.
Really, no.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.